This is Hacker Public Radio. It is a podcast that comes out every single weekday, and it could be a different host every day. It usually is a different host every day, because anybody who feels like recording a show can record it and upload it, and we publish it. And the only restriction is that it has to be a subject that is of interest to hackers. So here's where my interests overlap is I love hackers. I love what little bit of hacking I can do. And I love nerdcore rap. And you are absolutely the intersection of the two. And for folks listening, I'm speaking to Mr. Whitey Cracker. So how you doing, dude?
I'm doing excellent. How are you doing?
Oh, fantastic. I'm doing pretty good. And I'm glad to hear you're doing good. So, and you said you're kind of sick. I'm sorry to hear that, bro.
I generally like at this time of year, I catch what I call nerd flu. It's after you go to like a convention. I was just at in Vegas for Affiliate Summit and Internext, the porn convention, and then immediately after that, I went to this anime convention in Ohio. And when you're like in planes and you're, you know, shaking hands and taking pictures with everybody, invariably you will get infected, and that's just what's up. So I think I'm just fighting back a little bit of a head cold from all that run around.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right. So, dude, so for our listeners who don't know you, can you explain a little bit of your background?
My background as it pertains to the topic at hand, I guess. I used to be into penetration testing without permission when I was younger. And then I did a lot of what would be considered graffiti, except on websites. So it was kind of a very hip-hop way of getting up in a nerd fashion. And I used to detail a lot of these exploits and stuff, appropriate word, you know, in song form. And so as a result, I made a lot of music instead of like chronicling what was going on in the streets. It was more about what was going on the internet. So as a result, what is called now is nerdcore hip hop, named as such, is I guess the genre that I was performing in. So basically, yeah, in a nutshell, I have a long and storied computer background, and I married it with music, and thusly, I assault your ears with crap.
Oh, I wouldn't call it crap, dude. I love a whole bunch of it. I mean, you know, I don't love every nerdcore rap from every artist, you know, so I can't love all of them. But, you know, of the ones that I do really like, yours are, you know, top shelf. I mean, they are up there with the best of the best. I mean, you're there.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, man. I mean, because you give all this stuff away. I mean, a lot of it can be purchased. Which I got to take issue. You got one that's only for sale on iTunes right now. I got to be able to get it on Amazon or something.
Yeah, I have my philosophy has always been, the only reason I ever really started charging for music is like when you give something an intrinsic value, like if I wrote a song and said, hey, it costs $1,000 to download the song, people are going to immediately like, I want that song, you know, because it's $1,000 or whatever. Just, you know, anything expensive, just like a Louis Vuitton bag is, you know, maybe slightly better crafted than, you know, your guest bag or, you know, your school backpack or something like that. But it's just the name. So in a sense, really, I've always wanted to have fans more than the money, because a fan will come and see you perform when you go to their town or whatever, or they'll buy T-shirts or something. So, you know, really, like, I think music is like one of those commodities, you know, it's art. So it should be shared, you know, and disseminated and remixed and played with and all that kind of stuff. So I've always believed in just kind of letting the things happen. I'm never going to sue anybody for stealing my music or anything.
Yeah, right on. So are you making a living doing music? Are you like on the road?
I make like a theoretical living at music. My main love affair with money, I make a living off of internet websites and internet marketing and stuff like that. So the internet is my office, so I'm able to do it from anywhere. If I was to just shut that down and, you know, tour constantly and be more diligent about selling merchandise and stuff, I have no doubt that I could sustain myself off of just music, but music has always kind of remained more of a secondary or tertiary profession in the sense that it's more of a hobby that kind of became something more in a sense, but it winds up being, you know, I guess a focus point for periods of time, I guess. So it's a semi-living.
Cool. Can we talk about your background? Is that something you're comfortable talking about? I know it's a storied background. So where did you come from? Where did you grow up and stuff, like young ages?
Well, I was born in California. My dad took a job. My dad, he was a electrical engineering major. He got a degree and started working for Hughes Aircraft. And he was designing stuff for the Peacekeeper and TOW missiles. And so we moved out to California. I was born there, but my dad was originally from Colorado, Colorado Springs. And so when I turned two and we moved back to Denver, and then four, we were back in the Springs, Colorado Springs. And I lived most of my life there. Colorado Springs, huge defense influx. Like there's, you know, NORAD was there. I mentioned it, but Peterson, Schriever, the Air Force Academy. There's Fort Carson, which is a Army base. Like just a gigantic military presence. And so as a result, a lot of defense contractors. And my father did a lot of work for Lockheed Martin Marietta, then Lockheed Martin after the merger. And so, I mean, he was always like a hardware guy, but we had a computer in our house.
That was rare.
Oh, yeah.
How old? When were you born?
1982. Yeah. And so, I mean, we had like, I mean, I helped build a Timex Sinclair at 1K of memory, which is like basically like a screen full.
Damn.
The TI-99, it had a TI Basic was like the operating system of it. Kind of like how Apple II's Apple Basic was there.
Let me ask you a quick question about that, about building them. Did your dad, is this something like he put you up to and made you do it? Or was this something like you jumped at? You're like, oh snap, I get to build a computer.
Oh, I was fascinated. Like I started reading very, very young. I was two. Like there's cassette tapes of me reading books and stuff at 2 years old. By four, I mean, computers always just fascinated me. And so by four, I was there's these magazines you'd get and the books you could buy, and you could just transcribe basic programs from the books and type them in. And so just through repetition, that type of thing, that's how I learned how to program and modify games the way that I wanted them modified just by typing in and stuff. And so, the thought of, you know, building computers, like honestly, the older I got, the less hardware, like wear stuff. Like my dad was always a very good hardware nut. But the older I got, like I wasn't playing with the breadboards and stuff as much. It was all about software for me.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I when my oldest daughter asked me for a computer, I made her build it, and I just didn't know. Like, you know, I told her, but she didn't seem too enthused about it, except for when we were doing it. But I don't know if it was more the time we were spending together or the computer part of it. But she at least gets to brag to her computer teacher that she built her own, and nobody else even knows what she means by that. But, you know.
I had a similar experience not too long ago with my own daughter. I was trying to, my computer wouldn't post one of my PCs, and so I opened it up and I was explaining to her all of the, you know, different components of a computer. And again, like, it's... You could, because she loves playing computer games, but she's not so much into the how does a computer game really work. You know, I think that was part of my, I guess, love affair with it, is the fact that I wanted to know, like, the behind the scenes type of stuff. She wasn't incredibly interested, but, you know, it's kind of engaging material. Like, you sort of have to have a love for it. You know what I mean? Some people have it, some people don't. It's just a passion towards anything, you know?
Yep. Now, how old were you when that happened?
With what?
When you were building computers with your dad?
Oh, like I said, 4, 5, 6.
Wow.
You know, like I was in Cub Scouts, and like the Pinewood Derby car that I built was a police car, and it had like a working siren with a LED.
Nice.
So, I mean, there's all sorts of like little electronics that, like, having a father, I guess, that was, you know, involved in electronics and everything, like, I think maybe have helped, because... you know, every kid looks up to their parents at some point in their life. So
yeah, No, I've built the Pinewood Derby cars too, but I never did it as a kid. I did it as a dad. We've built a couple now, but mostly my son has done his own. He's done all his. He wouldn't even let me help you. You know, even when I tried, he did what I told him to do as far as the performance stuff. But all his own stuff was his own stuff, and we did grown up stuff. So I made one that looked like a NES controller with a mushroom drive, and I did another one like with carbon fiber and stuff. I went nuts with it.
That's awesome.
But we've done those, but they were fun. So when did rap and hip, well, back then it wasn't hip hop, it was rap, but when did rap come into your life?
I was like kind of queer. I don't know. I love like poetry and everything. And I loved writing stories. And I mean, even, you know, when I was little, that came with the reading. And then, I played guitar since like high school, but I say middle school, I kind of really got into hip hop. Just, I think there was just that suburban, like there was the whole MC Hammer, Vanilla Ice wave or whatever that had come out.
Yeah, right on. That was like phase three for me.
Yeah, that was like the skating rink phase, I would call it.
Yep. Oh man, the skating rink. How many girlfriends did you have from the skating rink?
Man, not many, honestly. I remember the disco ball would spin, and it would like screw me up, so I'd always fall over because the lights reflect on the rink, and you know, it make you look like you're going super fast.
Yeah, yeah.
I was really, really nerdy, like growing, like, I mean, I wasn't like socially outcast or anything like that, but I was super just like off, I guess you could say. Like, it just kind of didn't really fit in.
I don't think you got to explain that to the Hacker Public Radio crowd. I think we all understand that. I think pretty much most of us come from a similar background as far as that mindset is concerned.
Yeah, so I may have had a lot of girlfriends, but they didn't know it. They didn't know they were my girlfriend.
Oh, right on. Yeah, see, I used to have to go to the skating rink to meet girls because all the girls from my town already knew what a nerd I was. So I had to go there to meet girls from other towns. So I had at least three or four.
Yes, and then you got the whole, my girlfriend goes to another school. Like that whole thing. Like, oh, you don't,
yeah.
You don't know her.
And what a bitch it was making calls because two towns over was long distance and your parents would kill you for racking the bill up.
Dude, I'm having, man, this is some memory lane, like, fun back to me. that's good stuff.
So you came into, or rap came to you about the time of like MC Hammer and those guys? That was when you started in?
It wasn't the hip hop that I like. So like, it was this whole, like, I remember I had a Newsweek magazine and it had like Snoop on the cover. And it was talking about, I got the magazine at my grandparents' house or something like that. I was talking about this influx of gangster rap, like just this gritty, you know, I guess portrait of the street type of stuff that, I mean, a suburban kid like myself never would have even imagined the you know, types of goings on in this.
Yeah.
And I think that happened to a lot of kids. And so, but it wasn't until I would say like high school age when I really started to, you know, do it myself. And, you know, there's always this huge hip hop notion of keeping it real and everything. And so I was part of this little collective. We called ourselves Angel Pool on Key Elements. And it was just like this hodgepodge of guys. But, you know, every verse that I was throwing down would always have like computer references and stuff in it.
Yep.
And so it was, I rapped what I knew. And then conversely, I guess that sort of just spilled over into, you know, full songs. And I would do like these parody type songs that like reflected Cash Money, No Limit type of stuff, except I was doing them about, you know, spamming on the internet or, you know, hacking or something like that. And so that's sort of the genesis of all that stuff.
I'm glad you brought up Keeping It Real, because it was something that you made me, almost immediately I was thinking of Keeping It Real, where a lot of hip hop kind of centers around having that credibility and keeping it real and rapping about what you know and not being a pretender, which is where, like, you know, guys like Vanilla Ice made their mistake, where he rapped about being a gangster when he'd never seen one.
Right, right.
Right. So the fact that you're rapping about nerdy stuff and stuff that isn't mainstream, but it is what you know, to me, that is keeping it real. And my guess is that you probably didn't have to fight for cred, that it probably came with that because you were keeping it real. Is that about right, or was it still tough?
At the beginning, like, it was odd. there was this period of time where I had, like, I was entertaining a very small group of people that, you know, kind of, we had a good laugh about it.
And just for people who don't know, this is back when nerds were not cool yet.
Right, right. I mean, I'm talking, like, yeah, late 90s even. I mean, I guess there's sort of a chic kind of attached to it. Like, there was that whole kind of resurgence in the 80s, but it was a giant parody of itself. What wound up happening, I guess, is it, yeah, towards the end of the 90s and beginning of, I even had, like, when I was doing initially the music that I was doing, it was finding an audience, but oddly enough, there was a lot of people that were against me. Like, they were like, you know, this is stupid. Like, what is this white kid trying to rap about? You know, and even, like, people on Metafilter, and, you know, these are supposed to be my people, you know, that are, they're feeling this. And so there was a period of time where I found a lot of opposition. But in 2003, like, was a, one of my largest stage performance. I performed with Exhibit of, like, Pimp My Ride, you know, Dog Pound fame.
Yep.
I was doing the Player's Ball, which is, you know, this, like, Don Magic Juan, you know, Snoop performed there, you know, a great respect for what I was doing because of the whole keeping it real aspect, which was really cool.
Now, here's where you have me at a slight disadvantage, because where I came into to rap, or where rap came to, I've never done it. I've only ever been a fan and a listener. Where it came to me earlier, like I was listening to rap in probably 84, 85, 86, because I won't say I lived in the city, but I lived right on the outskirts of Boston. And I was listening to all of that. And then when the early 90s rolled around, and, like, NWA, I could not get enough NWA, but even before that, I couldn't get enough of, like, EPMD, even DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince were hot shit to me because I was a young kid. But when 2 Live Crew came around and their disrespect for women started coming in, even as a young kid, as, like, a 13-year-old kid, maybe I was 13 or 14 or 15, something like that, I couldn't take it, and I bailed on rap. And I had no music really in my life for, like, several years, until somebody was like, okay, look, here's Led Zeppelin, here's Jethro Tull, and, you know, so, like, here's some good music, no problem. And then recently, like 2005, 2006, I started hearing some nerdcore, and I was like, oh man, this is old school good rap. This is great. So I missed from, like, probably 94 to 2004. So I never heard, you know, these guys you're talking about now, like Snoop Dogg and I forget the other guy I just mentioned, the Dog Pound.
Exhibit used to rap with this group called the Alcoholics, but, you know, he was with you know, Snoop and Dre and Eminem, like that whole, like, kind of Death Row clique, or it wasn't Death Row, Aftermath. Like, I've always been a fan of it. Oddly enough, like, my first and biggest love of music is electronic music. Still to this day, is probably, like, what I listen to the most and what I love the most. So there's a lot of that feel is in my beats and everything. I do a lot of, like, chiptune-y electronic stuff in the beats I usually attack. Maybe electronic music now is probably, like, one of the most forward-thinking genres of music that exists in hip-hop. It's odd because I think that you can take a hip-hop song from 10 years ago, play it today, and it's still about the same message. And nerdcore is kind of cool because it encapsulates technology and stuff in a very interesting way. So because of that, I think it stays a little fresher than, you know, most things.
Totally feeling what you're saying there. The your chip tunes there, I've got to admit, I never played the game Chrono Trigger until I heard your album Chrono Nerga, and heard what's his name, Chadley, on the Nerdcore Meow podcast mentioned that game so many times, and I went back and played the game, and some of the music started coming up that you were using in your songs. I was like, holy crap, these are almost as good as his record. So that was really cool for me. And electronic music, I think, has always been at the forefront. I just think it took a dive in the 80s when some of the synths got too easy. Some of the synths that didn't sound so good got too easy to use. But I just heard a thing today. Apparently there's a short documentary out there about the guys who made the Doctor Who theme song, from, like, the one that they started using in the late 60s with the theremin sound and thing. And that was all, like, cut and paste, like, literally cut and pasted tape. And
right,
the little bit that you hear of that, it's fantastic. If you ever get a chance to check that out, if you haven't, that's I mean, it's so eerie and creepy and awe-inspiring at the same time. It's fantastic, and electronic music can do that.
Definitely.
Definitely. So I'm definitely feeling what you're doing. And I'll just take a pull the curtain back for a second here. I'm trying my best not to talk over you because we're using Skype recorder here, and when I talk, it cuts you out completely from the recording. So don't think that I'm not involved. I'm just waiting for a break. So sorry for that.
No, not at all. That's perfectly fine.
So, all right. So now when you started getting into rap, you were rapping about hacking. So what kind of hacking were you doing? What year did that start up for you, I guess? What era, and like what was the system you were using, and what kind of hacking were you doing?
I guess the music is more like a life imitates art, imitates life, imitates art type of the wheel there. I was big into the local BBS scene, which was, it was funny because there was a lot of boards kind of in the Springs area, and everybody kind of had their little cliques. Like I co-sys up two boards, but then there was this other board, Vertigo. I did Dominion and Vampires Anonymous, and Vampires Anonymous had this huge like Vampire the Masquerade role-playing thing. But you know, we all had like Trade Wars was a huge game, and Legend of the Red Dragon. But there are these gigantic like weird cliques, I guess, in the BBS scene, just locally, even just among the people that would meet at Denny's 3 a.m. And from that, you know, there was all this kind of rivalry board hacking where, you know, you'd set up tone locks to war dial someone's nodes so that way they couldn't, no one could call in. And so, I mean, there were just kid stuff like that. I remember my dad got a slip account through work, and then so finally Trumpet Windsock was on the internet, and you know, learning about, and the web was a baby. I mean, we used Mosaic, NCSA Mosaic was the browser at the time, and I mean the standard was really low. There was MUDs, you know, that were kind of like doors off Telnet and everything. So I was kind of there from the beginning, this technology. And then when I got into the hacking stuff, I mean, back then, I mean, it's still the same today. There's always just odd vulnerabilities, different types of them, but more I was into that hip hop culture due to my, you know, white kid identity crisis or whatever. And so it was kind of this same sort of thing. Like I'd go in there and I'd, you know, deface web pages, you know, replace the index pages of government web servers or company web servers. And, you know, whether it's through backdoors or if we had, you know, I remember I had the local library rooted and they're running some System 5 that you could get in through BBS, and then you could use that actually to get on the internet. I don't know. There's just all kinds of weird stuff, I guess. But then it was more just taking that, you know, musically, than if you were to take out like drug dealing and shooting people and replace it with, you know, hacking computers and cracking passwords, you have the same type of thing.
Right on. So a lot of what you were doing, at the time, it sounds like more of a graffiti type thing and just trying to get some attention more than like an outright destructive or exploitative thing. Is that about right?
Yeah, part of the, like what it became was this kind of weird hacktivist. I mean, before hacktivist, that title even existed. Like when I started doing things against the government, you know, and defacing their sites, I was responsible. I mean, again, I guess, I don't know if statute of limitations has passed on this so much, but.
Don't talk about anything that you can't talk about. I'm not trying to drag anything out of you.
Not like that. I mean, there was times I would warn administrators and I would be like, hey, your shit's not secure, and then I'd get no response, and so then I'd own them, and then all of a sudden, well, then, you know, people run around like chickens with their head cut off fixing things. And you know, some of it just, I said, it became kind of this weird cat and mouse game in a sense. It was huge, the America Online hacking scene, which now in retrospect it's very odd because AOL has become this kind of odd fraternity. Like guys that were on it, most of us are successful business guys, and everybody has a story about a punter or something. But I mean, we had like root access on, you know, internal AOL servers, and you know, we were able to pull credit cards and account information. And
oh,
I mean,
shit.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of articles on the internet if you look them up. Just Whitey Cracker AOL. Like, we had access to the Consumer Resource Information System. This thing called Chris and Merlin, and I mean, as many people that were on AOL, you could literally type in anyone's phone number or address or name, and you were able to pull all their information. So you could shut up a lot of people quick, you know, when you're able, if you got somebody's phone number, you could pull up all their account information and stuff, because most everybody had a grandma or a dad or somebody like that on AOL. I mean, I still have the screen name Bryce. like no numbers, just Bryce. And I have, and YTC is suspended, but I still have YXC, and I used to have the screen name YT, which, and I had the screen name W.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's a lot of my rhymes and stuff like that earlier that were about the America Online, like, spamming and hacking scene and stuff. I forgot even what I was talking about. But in any case, the whole, this whole, you know, warning, early warning system that I had, it became this thing that, hey, this is a kid, a 16, 17-year-old kid that's, like, outsmarting, you know, a multi-billion-dollar government operation or a corporate operation, and it shouldn't be that easy. Like, if people are not doing their jobs, obviously. And so it became this sort of a statement to me, like, you know, hey, if I can do it, you know, in my free time, you know, after cutting class or whatever, then, I mean, surely a foreign national could do this, and, you know, with much worse plans, you know. And now I think that's more important than it was, you know, 13 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, you wrote an article on your blog. I'm not sure how long ago you wrote it, but I read it maybe last week or the week before, about how America is treating its hackers and how they're criminalized for learning stuff, but other countries are assimilating their hackers. And so we're, you know, our government, our country's way behind on its technological skills. And that happened, I read that article like a day or two before the whole Aaron Schwartz, thank you, my brain turned off there, before the whole Aaron Schwartz fiasco, I'm gonna call it, happened. And I mean, for me reading it, it couldn't have been more timely. But that, I mean, you know, people listening should check out
the Whiteycracker.com.
People listening should check out Whiteycracker.com. And I think it's still at the bottom of the front page, and just scroll down and check out a couple of those articles, because the articles you're writing are fantastic. So at the time you were, you know, doing the defacing and letting people know, and kind of doing what white hat hackers do nowadays, is letting people know about vulnerabilities. You know, it seems like now there's a thing where people put like a time limit on it, where they'll release it if they're not, if it isn't patched, or they'll put a bounty on it if they're not paid for it. But you were kind of pioneering that idea. And the government, as I understand it, didn't like that. And they figured you out at some point, right?
I was never too secretive about what I was doing. And that's the thing. In my police report, I mean, it's thick. It's like a Tolstoy novel. I mean, I went by Whitey Cracker said personally and professionally, I guess, as it were. Like, people knew me as it, because I was in the band, and I did all this, like, I was doing electronic music and the hip-hop stuff, and everything that I did, I mean, tied, and even the police officer, you know, post-Columbine, I was in high school, like, right when that happened, and that happened right up the road, and so we started having, you know, police presence at our schools a little bit. That became sort of a mandatory thing, and even the cop knew who I was, you know, when they asked him about me and stuff. So I wasn't ever very, like, secretive about it. But, you know, the thing is now, you know, in this post 9/11 terror stricken world, I mean, I can't imagine, because, I mean, I got off relatively easy. I mean, it was just basically a dollar amount attached to my crimes. I mean, nowadays, that type of, like, you cannot make the government look foolish these days, because it's just spitting in their face. And so, you know, now I'm sure there'd be a little heftier penalty attached to the types of things that I was doing. So, I mean, it's the good old days in some ways, because it was after, you know, computer fraud abuse 86, you know, when people didn't know what to do with the criminals. Like, they had a vague idea what to do then, but it wasn't like every guy with a computer and bad intentions as a terrorist type of thing.
Yeah, right on. What did they charge you? Oh, okay, well, first of all, I gotta know, do you have like screen caps? Do you have screen captures of any of this stuff that you did? Because it's gotta be funny, right?
There used to be this government training video. Oh, there it is. Yeah. I uploaded it on YouTube. Here, I'll send it to you real quick. There. But this was actually on a government site. And it took, like, pieces of my the local news, jumped on it. And I was in the paper for a little while after this. I got really lucky, because the reason I basically got charged under state statutes of computer crime, which is, like, this vague bullshit throwaway thing And the reason that happened was because I had hacked the local PD. The Colorado Springs website was right on the intranet of the where the CSPD was, and I had done acts of just like I was about to change school records and stuff. I had everything. I had my hooks in a lot of stuff at that time, just because it became like I don't know, obsessive. Like you just want to collect all the Pokemon.
Yeah, I understand that.
At this time, again, like, you know, when you're 17 and my hormones are raging, but I didn't have a female to pick out on. The internet was my mistress. And so basically, I was able to get charged locally and not under federal statutes and guidelines. I didn't face federal court as a result of it because they had agreed to drop the jurisdiction to the local level. You know, so all the cases got bundled up and thrown into a local circuit court, and I got probation, and like it was like $200,000 in restitution, or it wound up being huge. I think it started out as like 120 or something, but then interest and all this. But I paid that off years ago, and I finally got done with. So that was the extent of it. I didn't serve any time. They didn't say you can't use the internet because they knew that they couldn't get money. The money that they wanted for restitution out of me if I couldn't use a computer. So again, like I said, I was in this period of time where computer criminals weren't completely vilified because people understood that, oh, this is the difference between a guy that hacks banks and a guy that, you know, is just defacing websites or whatever.
Yeah, first of all, wow, they really didn't know what to do with, you know, computer hackers at the time, because there's so many better options. I mean, you either send a guy for prison if he's a real bad guy, or you hire the guy if he's not a real bad guy. But also, wow, that's a shit ton of money, dude, to pull all that together. That's incredible. Okay, so you were convicted, whether you pled guilty or they found you guilty, whatever. Was that is that considered a misdemeanor or a felony? And did they charge you as a minor so that you got a clean record now? I mean, how's that affecting you now?
Well, it was a felony, but I was 17 at the time of my conviction or the offense or whatever. So I was adjudicated. But then I wound up picking a handgun charge later.
Oh, balls.
Yeah, so, I mean, it had, a ripple effect in my life in the sense that what happened, the whole hire or fire thing type, or hire, lock them up type of thing, I remember asking them about that, you know, when it had happened. And their reasoning was that, and it made sense, actually, like, that a John Q taxpayer, like a regular person that would be that pays taxes and goes to work 9 to 5, you know, it's hard to justify like letting a criminal work for them. It's like that most people you could not justify to a taxpayer and say like, well, we took this criminal who was doing bad things and now we gave him a job.
I can understand that argument on its surface, but I wouldn't buy it now and I wouldn't buy it then, because that assumes that the government doesn't know how to do anything on the DL, and I don't buy that shit for a minute.
To a degree, like, I get that, you know, 110%. There is many ways, I think, to skate it, and enough black ops ways, and there's even ways to do it out in the open. I think it was, that's where the public perception was different at that time. Just like the catch me if you can thing, like if you take a guy that, you know, is forging checks, you know, left or right, I mean, what better person to catch a criminal than a criminal type of thing? And, you know, forensically, I mean, it takes a criminal mind to do criminal things. And that's where I think the game has always been fun, is that there's always this type of give and take where, I mean, tomorrow, if somebody asked me, I mean, I could end spam on the internet. I can end, there's a lot of things that I know just intrinsically how to do, and no one has really gotten right yet because of the fact that the people that are in charge are not thinking about how to beat it. And I think it was odd the other day, Kimball from Kim, the .com mega upload guy, he had this like 3-step plan to eliminate piracy. And he's like, make it easy to get, make it available on any device, and make it available in all regions at the same time. And you're not going to have piracy issues.
Yeah, that's a well-known fact. We who consume media via the internet have known that for 10 or 12 years now.
And that's what's so weird, is there's a rift in between. Like, I always forget until I talk to, I mean, not to be condescending in a sense, but like when I talk to like normal quote unquote people, or like the average computer user or something, it's so insane to realize how much they don't understand about like a computer or like what works. And these executives, like, when I worked desk side support, you know, for a while, like you run into these people that are, you know, paid their six-figure jobs, six-figure incomes, relatively intelligent in their field, but.
But they're running their Windows computer as admin.
And they don't understand how a spreadsheet file can disappear. They don't know how to open this email. I mean, it's a ridiculous, like, amount of just retardation is the best way I could describe it, is that with this technology available everywhere, some people just, like, they don't want to learn it. And so as a result of that, you kind of see this, that there's a lot of things that I think we take for granted as people that are savvy in the computer industry that other people just do not. I mean, they don't understand the concepts behind it. And it's way easier for me to open up Netflix and stream movies. Like, I love that. Like, if I don't have to pirate it and I just pay, you know, $10, $15, $20 a month to have access to the things I want access to, like, I have no problem with that. I mean, that's easier than me having to go even open up my torrent client and open a VPN and find the, you know, right torrent that it has a lot of cedars and a skull by it, so I know it's a real guy, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easier to pay $2 than to spend $2 worth of your time to find the thing and pirate it. I agree 100% with that.
Opportunity cost.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so once you got done with that, with the legal stuff, turning 18 years old now, and you got a, did you move out your parents' house right away and start working? Did you hang around for a while? I mean, what did those years look like?
I started a penetration testing company with my buddy Edward. He was actually in Global Hell, which is a hacker group, with me. I did contract database design for an escort service and a limo service. I mean, and again, like, I'm just 18, fresh-faced, and I'm already traveling. And, you know, people saw this, my resume, as a bonus, you know, like, oh, that's really interesting that this guy, you know, hacks computers and, you know, knows what he's doing and all this stuff. So I worked at Gateway. I was tech support there. I did desk side support for Ford Credit, Ford Financial, which is a car company. I was a database developer for MCI. So, I mean, I had this crazy resume. I mean, this was all by the time I was 22, 23 or something. So I had a really good experience, you know, over, I mean, I dropped out of high school. So basically, it kind of did carry me. Everybody saw it more as a positive than as a negative. And it wasn't, you know, I passed background checks because it wasn't, you know, again, it was as a juvenile. So definitely a bonus.
Right on. And you kept doing that, probably till you went into business for yourself?
When I was 18, I incorporated or organized my LLC. And I used to I was DJing electronic music. And I did club promotion and rave promotion and stuff. That's what Digital Gangster first started out as, and then it kind of blossomed the consulting stuff. But I basically, you know, went and got the 9-to-5 thing because I had a daughter, and so I wanted to make sure that things were kind of I's were dotted and T's were crossed there. But I just got stiffed over and over in the corporate world. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. And eventually I was just like, well, you know, I think if I trust my own instincts, I just do business for myself, I'll do okay. And it's panned out. I don't really have any complaints other than, you know, sometimes I work odd hours and sometimes I'm completely swamped and sometimes I have absolutely nothing going on. But at the same time, you know, when you're in charge of your destiny, it kind of has a different effect on, you know, when the harder you work, the better you do. That has a real good impact, I think, on your psyche.
Excellent. Yeah, I've never worked for myself, but it's intriguing, but it's a big scary jump to make for sure. So some of your earlier albums, like Spam Tech, I know it's the name of the album, but is Spam Tech for real? Did you ever do spamming and that kind of thing? Have you earned a living on that, or is that something you can't quite talk about?
I'd say spamming, that's no secret. I mean, spamming is the genesis. It's actually what screwed up money for me, in a sense, because this was in high school too. Like, when most kids were getting summer jobs, I mean, I bought all my own clothes. I did move out of the house when I was 17, because I mean, I had, and everything that I'd done, you know, in that marketing field, that's why I was doing the adult internet conventions and stuff so young as well, because I was really entrenched in that business. And Spam Tech was this group of, it was me and this other kid, Flo Taylor, then this guy, EGOD. He was like a fan, but then he wound up joining, and then it was like this triumvirate. And then I had a buddy, Ryan, who kind of came in later as the consigliere. And, you know, to this day, we've maintained our relative friendships, with the exception of one member. But to this day, we're still, like, fairly tight, and we still do a lot of stuff together.
What's the backstory with the lobster bisque? I don't get that joke.
There's this guy version, Evan Gates, who he's actually, he's working somewhere. He's doing something, but he was a programmer for one of our entities. And I met him off my board, Digital Gangster, and he was local to me in Colorado. He was going to school in Boulder, but he was working for us, and we think he gave him $5 to drink a bowl of lobster bisque. And it was just like one of those things, like that song, Kingdom Trial, is like basically about like testing, you know, your loyalty as a as a human being, you know, if you're going to be down with the the cause or not. And lobster bisque is not the coolest thing to drink. It would make me vomit, but yeah, for $5, he did it, and he did a bang-up job.
All right, right on. I'm a fan of lobster bisque, so I probably would have done that too. So I guess, does that bring us up to nowadays, or is there more backstory there?
No, I mean, just life happens. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, weird ups and downs and things here and there. I mean, I was married, divorced, daughter born, you know, all that stuff. And some of it, I can see the music, like how it evolved. There's this period, like in the Spamtech, in the second Spamtech album, there's a lot of these, like, kind of emo-y songs and that period, you know, when I was going through my breakup and everything. But yeah, again, it's odd because, you know, most times you have, like, if you listen to a song on the radio or you hear a song, like I said about, you know, the roller rink, like when you hear, you know, an MC Hammer track or something like that, you're like, oh yeah, the roller rink. Like, it's cool to have my own music, like the kind of snapshotted pieces of my life, like where if I hear a song, I remember kind of, you know, what I was going through or what Taylor was going through, or, you know, what was going on at that time, or when I made it, or how we made it, or where we were when we made it. So that sort of a look is really, I think, interesting, because it sort of has this ability to, you know, bring me back to a time and a place. Not here. It's like time traveling. It's insane.
Yeah, I can absolutely get down with that. I when I went through my divorce, I might not have survived it if it weren't for soulful music. Like, I got into blues. I got into like old school blues, you know, Buddy Guy and you know, B.B. King and Bobby Bland and that kind of thing. And then there's some newer stuff that's real soulful. But if there weren't that lifeline, I know what you mean. I don't know if I would have survived it. But yeah, music, you can definitely trace your state of mind through your playlist at any given point.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's amazing like that. Music is, well, it's kind of a platitude, but I guess music is life, right? Cliche or whatever.
Well, I don't know if. I mean, sure, if you're making it, it must be. But I mean, as a listener, I wouldn't call it life, but it's definitely like the frame around the picture. You know what I mean? Like it's just a way to see it with some sort of perspective, as opposed to only being in the center of the orb of, you know, happenstance. You know, it lets you step back and have a look for a minute anyway.
Oh, definitely. It's like kind of just like a thread, I guess, a thing. And it's inescapable, I think, even just in culture. It's always been that way, though. Whereas, I mean, maybe, yeah, somebody that makes it, like, I have a different, like, appreciation for it. But, it's not, like, a more appreciation. It's just a different appreciation, I guess, is what it comes down to. That I think as a listener, people have a certain appreciation for something. But then, it's, like, when you break it down, it's, like, a whole different type of appreciation for music.
So now, did you just release you just released an album, right? This is one that we just talked about. You had it was on iTunes.
No. The album I just released, I did on Bandcamp, which is the concept of it is great. It's this, like, pay what you want, like, or you can charge for it, but it's that whole Kim.com thing we were talking about earlier, where you just say how much you want to pay for the album. If you want to pay $0, pay $0, and you can get it for free. And it's on Bandcamp. to go to whiteycracker.bandcamp.com, and it's based off of Earthbound, which is another SNES RPG. It was called Mother in Japan and I think Europe too, but it's the same type of thing as Chrono Trigger, except it's Earthbound music.
Nice. Should I go back and play the game before listening to the album, or should I listen to the album before playing the game?
It doesn't really matter. If you play the game, like, all of the names of the songs have to do with the same thing with Chrono Trigger. It's this it's the titles of the soundtrack, like the actual songs and the subjects are it's the same in the soundtrack as it is in my song. So if you play the game, you have a different appreciation for it. But unlike Chrono Trigger, the songs don't have as much to do with the game as they did.
Have you played Andor's Trail yet? It's a free software game they got on Android. I'd love to hear an album about that game. It's pretty friggin' awesome.
Not yet. In fact, I don't I'm thinking about getting the Note 2. Everybody did. I'm still iPhone, but everybody in my immediate circle went to the Note 2. It's like a phablet, like a phone tablet type of thing. So I'm probably going to wind up switching here soon. My girl's got a Galaxy. Is it Galaxy S? What do you have?
Oh, I used to have that. I'm with T-Mobile. It's just My touch.
Yeah. So I'm my experience with Android, like I always had this feeling every time I've used a phone, an Android phone, it's always seemed like it hadn't grown up yet. But finally, after like thumbing through with that Note 2, it looks like it's a real boy now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm way behind the time on gadgets and stuff. I'm still using, it might even be a My Touch. It's the HTC Magic, but it's years old, but it's running, it's running CyanogenMod, so it isn't so terrible. But, you know, I've been playing that game, Andor's Trail, on that. And it's that kind of adventure, like the turn-based, same kind of game as Chrono Trigger and Earthbound. What the hell is it called again?
Role-playing game?
Thank you. I don't know why my brain switches off every time I try to talk about something I'm doing. But, anyway, that's all that is. So what are you doing now as far as business goes, because you said you rap about life, so someone listening to the show wants to hire you for some of their internet stuff. How do we get on your next album as a customer of what you're doing in life now?
I do, like, it's kind of like Godfather, how Tom Hagen, you know, represents the interest of one client. It's generally how it goes. Like, I have partnership stakes in the things that I do, but more or less, yeah, I'm like a combination of Tom Hagen and Winston Wolfe from Pulp Fiction. I solve a lot of odd problems, but actually right now, I have more things to do than I do time, and so that's always bad. Like, in fact, I procrastinated everything I needed to do today because I'm a terrible person, and your interview was the reason that I was like, I got to do something today that's substantive. So, thank you for helping me do something productive today, because otherwise I would have just lazily stayed undressed and eaten barbecue chips all day.
Oh, geez, are you kidding me? Thank you for the interview. I mean, you're giving up your time for Hacker Public Radio, which is, you know, one of my passions. So, I mean, from my perspective, you're the one doing me the favor, for sure. And all of HPR, I think this interview is going to go over pretty well with our listeners. Is there anything you want people to know about that you're doing, or any causes that you're interested in that you want people to hear about and consider?
I'm currently, like, I'm big on the Bradley Manning and Jeremy Hammond issues. Basically, Bradley Manning, he's the one that's up for the WikiLeaks, like, declassified documents or classified documents release, and he's seeing
this. Hold on a second. I just unmuted by accident, cut you off. I'm sorry about that. Bradley Manning was the enlisted guy who released the documents to WikiLeaks.
Correct. And then Jeremy Hammond was a member of the LulzSec clique that I am, was loosely the bard of the... That is how I look at myself. I'm like a bard. Like, I'd say with the internet, it's like some Shakespearean... I put a soundtrack to the things that are going on. But Jeremy, he had that whole strat for... release, and that they did that kind of hacktivist thing with the credit cards and, you know, of these members. And it's coming out now that the judge in his case is married to one of the victims of the whole Stratfor hack and stuff. And
oh knows.
Yeah. Oh knows. And so there's this, but part of it goes back to that whole thing I was saying about the treatment is disproportional to like the crime. There's child molesters and, you know, real scumbags, like real, like people that are trafficking in child pornography or rapists or murderers. And for them to be facing, oh, and Barrett Brown is another guy that he just got sentenced for the third time, indicted for a third series of stuff. He's looking at 100 years or something. There's this real runaway train.
Yeah, 100 years for that shit. And how long did the guy who tried to shoot Reagan, how long did he spend behind bars, I wonder?
Was that Sirhan?
Yeah, I think it was, and it was like 18 or 19 years or something.
So, I mean, that's like, there is something in a system that's supposed to be lawful, like, you know, and fair to some degree. I mean, it's very stupid, like, that a kid, you know, Aaron Schwartz would, like, kill himself. I mean, granted, there's things about, you know, his depression and stuff. Well, I feel that. Like, I know where that comes from. But, you know, he, you know, to kill himself because he's facing this many years over releasing, you know, some academic documents. And I think people have this, you know, well, it isn't me type of attitude towards a lot of this. And they don't understand that it's hard, I think, for any person to look and see, like, how this is kind of a miscarriage of what is justice, like, you know, that you can have violent criminals or, you know, exploitative, like, real pieces of shit, and then the fact that they walk free after 5 years and, you know, time served, good time, and then you have these guys who sat on a computer and embarrassed people, because, again, it's not like what Manning did was this gigantic... It was an embarrassment. It wasn't like a gigantic security breach that where the secrets of, you know, nuclear secrets of the United States were admonished. There's a total, just it's like a imbalance in how we punish these crimes, how we prosecute them, and what we do with these people. And I, so I'm definitely like involved in, I guess, trumpeting the causes of like, hey, yes, they did bad things, but, you know, everybody jaywalks. Come on, like we need some type of, you know, balance, some order in this stupid world.
Yeah, well, and in a system that's allegedly made of justice, let's have a little bit of justice.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole, I mean, where the punishment fits the crime type of thing, and that's the thing. I think if you polled, you know, the regular people on the street, this is something that they can understand. Like, okay, like, you know, I mean, how many people in, you know, in an immediate family, like I would say, like, or extended, if I extended my cousin or something like that, like everybody has, knows that somebody that's been burglarized, everybody knows somebody that's been raped, everybody knows somebody that's, you know, be it a friend, be it a cousin, be it a, you know, uncle, or, you know, whatever, like there's always somebody, I mean, you can touch, it's like cancer, like there's some type of palpable, you know, understanding that, but, you know, how many people can say like, well, you know, I've been hacked, like, and it ruined my life, or I have PTSD because my AOL account was stolen or something. Like, there's a serious, like, if you break it down for people and then you make them understand that, like, look, there's a difference between like a bunch of rich people getting embarrassed and raping a child, and the guy that rapes the child gets out way earlier. There's something wrong with that model. So that's one of the things that, like, I think I'm biggest on, is just trying to get that reconciliation of the, hey, yeah, they did bad, and maybe they should have some type of punishment, but, you know, the types of punishment that we're levying as a society is completely wrong.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's so far beyond unproportional. It is just ridiculous. So you, how do I want to phrase this question? You accept the story that Aaron Schwartz killed himself, then?
Well, I'm not. Because I'm like a degree of separation away from him, and if this is real talk radio, like I mean, I'm bipolar, and so I mean, and I try to commit suicide. You know, I'm not like the clean person. You know, I'm not on medication. So I mean, I have, I used to be, but not anymore. So I like, I have own issues and I struggle with it. I think everybody that's on a computer is as much as me, or, you know, laterally, somebody's, everybody's got mental problems. You either got Asperger's or OCD or ADHD or bipolar disorder or some kind of mental, give it a name. And everybody that kind of is that degree of separation away from him, you know, said that he wasn't, that he had suffered from, you know, mental depression or clinical depression. And so it wouldn't, and I guess the looming sentence was weighing heavily on him. Jail doesn't scare me as much because it's a time for me to sit and read and play chess with myself and not have anybody bother me. So if they want to send me to jail, I'm more than happy to take the vacation. then, you know, somebody, so I don't think there's any kind of weird conspiracy at work in that. And again, the people that I said that know him, that are a degree of separation, like, don't, it's not some kind of out of character. Just as much, I'm sure that if I turned up dead, in, even if it was foul play, people that know me would be like, nah, he probably shot at himself or something. So
it's actually comforting to hear. I'm glad to hear you say that you know, that you buy the story, because I've heard a couple of people online, you know, or read, you know, where people say that they don't buy it, but it's comforting to hear that the story fits. So I don't know, you mentioned Bradley Manning. I don't know if you heard, there was a minor ruling in the case the other day. Did you hear about that one?
I follow Anon News, and he got they ruled that he was treated badly.
No, the one that I heard was the judge said that if I'm getting this right, and I could get this screwed up because it was a couple days ago that I heard it, but the judge said that the government cannot charge him with treason unless they can prove that what he did intentionally was intended to harm the country. So they're saying that you know, that this, as the story goes right now, he actually combed through that material and intentionally did not release, like, logistical stuff and situational stuff, that he stuck with the political stuff. So it doesn't look like they're going to be able to charge him with treason.
That's good. Just diet treason. Is what they're, like,
yeah, right. Treason light.
Treason light. Yeah, and that's where I said there's the huge, you know, just like computer crime is such a, like, a, it's two words that can mean anything, like, really. Like, so there's a whole just spectrum, you know, just like there's with murder, you have manslaughter, you have vehicular manslaughter, you have degrees of murder, premeditated, not premeditated, crime of passion, like those same types of, I guess, that spectrum needs to be, a lot of what the corporate guys, you know, do, like, on this huge scale, where they're bilking people out of money in these Ponzi schemes and the Wall Street culture, like, there has to be, like, this intent-based dissemination of what it is. If it's a kid having fun, you know, even if he is, like, hacking, you know, government agencies or whatever, if it's not for the purposes of, you know, complete and utter destruction of the infrastructure of the United States, then you need to treat it that way. You can't treat it the same as if somebody, you know, did something, you know, ridiculous. So there's I hope that every, you know, again, there's so much in the powers of the courts that, like, it can be a judge's interpretation. And then, you know, when you leave it to 12 people to decide in a jury or whatever, there's so many things that can go wrong, in a sense where these things need to line up properly. And you can have a good judge, you know, that gives you, you know, no time at all and understands the case. And or there's some that are just very old fashioned and they, you know, they know what it's like to have a computer. But other than that, they can't rule on a case like this properly.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you think we need to do about it? I mean, it's not like our legislators understand any of this and can write better laws. I mean, they're the people, they're in the pockets of, you know, they're the ones that wrote you know, SOPA and PIPA and ACTA and all this, you know, these other laws that are overreaching and repressive and, you know, anti-freedom as well. I mean, what's the next step then?
Well, oddly enough, like,
not to put you on the spot.
Oh, like, but like to tie this back, like into the, my music, like there's a lot of nerdcore that exists. That's kind of this secret handshake. That's like a for nerds, by nerds type of music. And what, one of the goals that I've always had in my music is to, like, I rap in a way that's palatable to, like, your average hip-hop listener or whatever. Like, there's a lot of people that give me great feedback. Like, that's, your flow sounds amazing, your beats sound amazing. So, and it's the same way that I was, you know, taken in by this gangster rap culture, and I listened to it, and I just detected the rawness, and I had the picture of the streets in my head. That same type of, I would love for that same type of thing to happen, you know, across, like, it reciprocated back, like, where, you know, I have kids from the street that are listening to the types of things that I'm saying, and they're learning, like, the lingo of the computers rather than, you know, the lingo of drugs. Like, they're learning about, you know, the types of things that I'm saying. And so, by extension, like, awareness, like, the computer is not a device to be feared. It's a device that we embrace. It's a device that every one of us uses. Like, it's not just nerds on computers anymore. Now everybody's got Facebook. Everybody has a smartphone. Everybody has these technological devices. And so the more that I think people are educated, you know, even if from elementary school, like if you taught people like good password, best practices for passwords and you know, protection of online identity, like if those types of educational initiatives were in place, then I think the country would have, the same way we were enamored with reality TV and politics and American Idol and stuff, if we could instill that same type of simplistic wonder in what a computer is, then I think a lot more people would understand the concepts that, like, you know, these kids, you know, if you can kind of draw these parallels and say, well, you know, this is the same as a kid throwing a rock through a window, and this is the same as a guy, you know, robbing a bank at gunpoint type of thing. Like, that, just by kind of turning the public on to those types of things, I think is the best way to increase the consciousness and therefore the visibility of, you know, what everything really means, rather than this scary machine and everyone's out to get you type of, you know, picture painted by the media currently.
So we need like a reality show for nerdcore and nerds and computer geeks, and we need to popularize that a little bit.
Yes, Keeping Up with the K-Rad.
Nice. So, all right, so when you talk about, you know, how the kids on the street and whatever or other people you're talking to listen to the same stuff, what's, if anybody hears this interview and goes and checks you out, and they like what you're doing, who are some other nerdcore artists that you would, or even regular hip-hop artists maybe that people don't know about, but, you know, on the sort of the up-and-comers or on the underground scene, who are some people, some artists that you would direct people towards?
I always leave people out when that's good. Like,
yeah, I won't ask for a complete list. You can never do that. I don't mean to do that, sorry.
Okay, spiritually, there's this group Dual Core, and that's this guy N80 and this dude C64, and they perform at DEF CON, and so they're actually fairly well known in the computer security circle. And
we're actually about 2 degrees separated from them here at Hacker Public Radio, because one of our contributors is a guy by the name of Dave Yates, who's a fantastic guy, and he did a podcast, the Lot of Linux Links, Linux User Podcast. It was a long name, sorry. And Dual Core did the intro music for him, and it was badass. It was great. So we're like 2 degrees separated from them.
Sick.
So everybody knows about them. So not to cut you off, but yeah, we're there.
Yeah, and then again, those are probably like the closest, like, because then like MC Lars, who's a frequent collaborator of mine, he's like a lit hop guy, because he's got a degree in 19th century literature from Stanford, and then, you know, Frontalot, all the names, like Megaran, this guy Random, he's actually touring very successfully, and he does a lot of the chiptune stuff, the 8-bit type of music and among others. But there used to be this time where it was this like kind of this really small echelon of a group of us that could tour and be successful at it. And now that's kind of grown. There's like, I'd say the bigger guys are like Adam Warwick. Dr. Awkward is touring with Random right now.
Oh man, Dr. Awkward is, there's something about a good awkward song that within 3 or 4 beats, you switch off the rest of the world and your headphones becomes all of it.
Sick. I've had the pleasure of kicking in with that guy many times. We go in. There used to be this huge, like I said, skill break, like all type stuff. But now, I mean, everybody that I, you know, generationally, like Benjamin Bear, I just did some stuff with him, and he's got some really witty stuff. DJ Snyder / Swagberg / is a really prolific.
Oh, that's who is?
Is Snyder. He's Swagberg. He's Goldman Sachs.
Is he MC Horse?
MC Horse. He's got a song like Pony Swag or something. Maybe he is MC Horse. He's got like AKs is Cool Keith, so he's hard to keep up with. But yeah, again, like exhaustively, Beefy is an artist that I signed an NSR. He's kind of doing his own. He's been doing his own thing for a while now. I haven't really helped him. I'm a terrible label mate.
Can you say that last one again? You cut out. You said Beefy, who by the way is nerdcore hip hop. And who did you say after Beefy?
Beefy, he was, I signed him to NSR, Nerdy South Records, but he's been doing everything by himself lately. So I said, I've been a terrible label mate. I'm not our label head or whatever. I'm not, I haven't really been developing his career as much as I should. I barely develop my own, for Christ's sake, so I don't know. But there's this, again, like the cool thing about this the scene is it's consistently, you know, kind of evolving and growing and stuff. And I'm... generationally, there's a lot of stuff I'm sure I'm missing out on, like the next big thing, you know, in it. And part of it is because I've always been kind of in a weird spot with my own music. But yeah, there's just so much like crazy. I don't know. It's just but again, dual core is my most like my closest relative, I would say, as far as you know, the music stuff goes. And part of the thing that I always liked about the type of music I was doing is in hip hop, there's another huge thing it's called biting, you know, and you never want to bite another guy's lyrics, because it's like stealing jokes as a comedian or whatever. And one thing I was always confident in is if I was rapping about computers and hacking in the way that I do, there was nobody else that had said the things that I had said or made the rhymes or the connections that I had made. And so, by extension, you know, raps acts like dual core and I, like, we are forging this entire like palette and body of work that if 5 years from now another hacker came on the scene and tried to rap about a fucking blue box, like, I've said everything there is to say about that. So you know, I can sue them for everything that they're worth, and they're I'll throw lawsuits at you. But it's just funny.
Right on. And okay, so you mentioned how people love your flow and your beats. I'm trying to end this, but there's so much I want to ask. You said you you played guitar. You play guitar in your own music too? That's you on those?
Yeah, I've done guitar on my own. So a lot of my beats, I've produced a lot of my own beats too. But some of the guitar is not mine. Elijah played guitar on some of my stuff. I've been playing guitar for 15 years. I was in a punk band called Formula 409 in high school. But yeah, I'm like classic rock through and through, like Led Zeppelin, Eric Clapton, Steppenwolf, Three Dog Night, like just all Creedence Clearwater Revival, like the type of stuff that I play guitar. Like, and a lot of 90s. I mean, I guess part of the time period I was in, I mean, I learned all of Nirvana Unplugged. I think that was like the first thing I taught myself was that whole album. But yeah, guitar has always been, I love the guitar and the piano because they're like two instruments that you can take to a party and become the most important person in the room. You can't take a trumpet and be like, yo, everybody, check this out. And then immediately everybody's singing along. So, yeah, I've always had a love for the guitar.
Did you play guitar on This Far from the Spam Tech album? Was that you?
That was, what the hell was that guy's name? Johnny something. That was another producer. I mean, I could play the riff if I had a guitar, but no, that wasn't me. No.
All right. Sorry about that.
maybe there's less of that than I think there is. I remember I did like these covers of songs, like on YouTube. You can see. I used to just get intoxicated and make YouTube covers of songs and stuff like that. So you could find Whitey Cracker cover songs all day on YouTube.
Right on. So, yeah, I don't want to take any more of your time. As awesome and as fun as this is, so I'll ask you a question. Let you think about it while I finish it up. But we're a Creative Commons podcast, so you know, we release basically Creative Commons by attribution, share alike. And I'm wondering if there's any of your music that's released under that license, can we close it out with a song? But then I'll just say, you know, if is there a place that people can follow you so we know when you're on tour, and how can we get to a show? And, you know, if you're ever up in the northeast of the country, if you're ever doing Boston or anything close to that, definitely hit me up so we can hang out, or you know, maybe I can show you around a little bit, or, you know, at least go to your show and buy a t-shirt or something.
I don't have like a real, I mean, it's oddly enough, I'm very familiar with Creative Commons and everything. Some of my music, like I don't, cause that's sampled or whatever. Like I don't even own the rights to, you know, push whatever I say. But like, let this be a verbal agreement that any type of music of mine that you want to use, any song that speaks to you, you have my permission, wholeheartedly to use, modify the whole nine. The tour thing, I mean, my Twitter is Real Whitey Cracker, because I don't have Whitey Cracker. And my Facebook's Whitey Cracker. WhiteyCracker.com is my website. But I kick this around a lot. My daughter is the most important human being on the planet to me. So I try to avoid being away for extended periods of time. Usually when I did tours, like it was, you know, while she was still in school and her mother had her. But, you know, during the summer, which is like heavy festival, like when I could be doing Warped and everything, I usually am just kind of, I may do one or two one-offs in there, but most of the time I spend with my daughter. So until she's, you know, the age where she's coming with me and back dancing or singing on my stuff, so that's pretty much how it is.
Yeah, I totally get that. My kids, I get very limited time with them as well.
It's I try to spend as much time as possible with her, because I think it's important to be a father. And I mean, even though things kind of happen out of order, you know, in my life, like I think that I said I'd rather have those, like, not have that regret, like where I just totally screwed up my kid's life because I was too busy chasing some stupid music dream than otherwise. But yeah, you'll find me where you find me. I mean, I announce stuff on there.
Awesome. So do you have a song, a favorite song of yours, or a song that you would like us to close out with, or that you'd like us to play here at the end?
I was just even saying this, I don't play my own stuff enough to know. Sometimes, like, after I'm done writing a song, I record it, and then I don't even listen to it again for months, and then until I need to perform it live, and then I need to, like, learn my own songs.
Nice. All right, I'll pick one and paste it in there, then. I'll pick one of my favorites, because there's a bunch of them. I was hoping you'd help me narrow them down, is all.
All right, but yes, Packer's privilege. It's your choice.
Awesome. So thanks so much, Whitey Cracker, the digital gangster, the DG, Mighty Whitey, for coming on Hacker Public Radio and helping us out here. It's been a fantastic interview and a lot of fun to record. I'm hoping it's a lot of fun to listen to. And, I mean, you're the man, dude. You're just baller for coming on here and spending the time. Thanks a lot.
It wasn't a complete waste of time.
Wasn't a waste of my time. I had a blast. So thank you so much. And thanks to everybody for listening. Check out Whitey Cracker. Check out his new album at whiteycracker.bandcamp.com. You can look at the show notes on hackerpublicradio.org to get links to everything that Whitey's mentioned here. And please leave a comment here or leave a comment on his webpage, his blog, whiteycracker.com. I'm sure he'll probably write a little blog post about this when the episode airs. And thanks for listening. Whitey, thanks for being my guest. And I hope you guys, everybody, have a great day.
Thank you.
Or is it morning? Couple days out awake and I see me yawning. James Bonding, pinging and they ain't responding. Mission accomplished, yeah bitch I'm pawning. Roll out the crib, white hat on the crest. Spam tech like a badge on the right of my chest. Flip, flip on my sidekick, I flip my wrist. SSH to my box, page down the next. My stats look good, what about my checks? So many digits, it's a Googleplex. Rotation of the earth like my spam subjects. Perplex the best, so we can get no rest. Slide in my Chrysler, the blades will slice your mesh grill on the front just to entice your iPod in the dash, nerve life supreme. Track to the spam tech audio stream. Still in my life like the perfect dream. There ain't a soul that can touch me on my team. Nah, district attorney set out on journeys. And then I lead them on like a weekend at Bernie's. Feds on the same track, collecting my combos. See me on AIM talking to all the blind hoes. Condos coast to coast, wireless enabled. When they set the sniff, I switch the cables. IPs bounce through multi-nations. I keep confidential like doctors' patients. It's Nerd Life and it's DG Death. Represent DG to my dying breath.
I'm full of DG and I ain't gonna stop. So don't twist it up, make it something it's not. From hangers to bandwidth, I'm still kicking. And I fry your ass like a piece of chicken. I'm still a DG and I ain't gonna stop. So don't twist it up, make it something it's not. From hangers to bandwidth, I'm still kicking. And I'll fry your ass like a piece of chicken.
Drive to the local coffee stop. Pull my laptop out and set up shop. Five for the coffee, pay and swap. Caught a couple Xbox to my drop. It's a Merry Christmas if you figure this. Both the naughty and nice are on my list. And if you notice something missing, don't get pissed. I pulled all your info from LexNexis. Those who cross me cross with care, because I won't leave till your wall is bare. You can't run from your social, cause I'll be there. And I'll get you next one, you don't have a prayer. I swear, people baffle me. Who the fuck would even wanna battle me? Boy, what a fucking day that'll be. When their life disappears with their chattel G. Don't rattle me, cause we rich in numbers. Every day see a couple of fresh newcomers. Trying to make a name off of my demise. And I always hit them up with the whitey surprise. Might not happen right away, cause I lay in the weeds. And I strike like a snake whenever I please. And such is the life of most DGs. You don't see it coming till you're on your knees. Begging and pleading, please stop beefing. You don't understand, we get mad and even. But it ain't even fair, cause we leave them breathing. Dealing with a shitstorm of digital treason. Squeaming, screaming, so now reaping. End up as a blip on my sidekick beefing. Every time they try to weasel out of my trap, I pull them right back, put their head in my lap. Little stressful, but I got enough sigs. And I got enough proxies to shake the pigs. Carton after carton of these 72s. And I'm still pulling hits out my under roofs. I still bruise. Pack up the DOS server, sit back and act like a calm observer. Call all the shots from miles away. Sitting in the Starbucks at the break of day. I don't play, so act like you think you know. Cause I'm a fucking DG, you're a fucking bitch, bro. Yeah.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.
They're always so weird, like these types of things. I don't know. They're hilarious to me. And I don't like, again, things with me change so fast, which is so funny. Cause like in 8 weeks I could be on tour. Like who knows? Like it's set on. So I'll make sure to keep you posted if there's anything weird that goes on over here.
Yeah. Right on. I should be able to, you know, adjust show notes and stuff at the last minute if that's needed. I'm not, you know, like I said, anybody at all can submit a show to Hacker Public Radio. Anybody who wants to, it just has to be, you know, of interest to hackers is what we put in quotes there. When we've had shows on everything from like Nmap and how Nmap works and getting into that to how I got into Linux, to one dude did a show on raising chickens in his backyard. You know, I did a show on nuts and bolts and how to repair those if you bung them up when you're making, you know, whatever you're doing and that kind of shit. So it's just, I mean, we do everything. And this, I think today I saw an email go out where our admin congratulated a new host on being our 298th, something like that, new host, almost 300 individuals.
That's insane. That's awesome.
Yeah. And we, like last year, the middle of last year, we had episode 1000 and 1024. So those were big shows for us.
That's insane. Like that's actually like a really cool model though, because then you could just have, I don't know. I'm looking at the website now. Like
you may know the guys who started it out. I mean, cause they're, you know, we came from like our lineage, I guess, so to speak, was like Radio Freak America bred, shit, now I lost it. I'll get it in a second. Shit, Stank Dog's show. Do you know Stank Dog?
Mm-mm, doesn't sound.
Oh,
where would I know?
Okay, he was a podcaster. I guess he guested on one of the Radio Freak America shows, which I mean this is before RSS even, when RFA was out. And then he did what was it? BinRev, Binary Revolution. He was the host of Binary Revolution. And then BinRev bred Twat Radio, which is Today with a Techie.
That's where Stank Dog came from. Yeah, he did Binary Revolution Radio.
Yep, he did BinRev, and then he did Twat Radio, and then he did HPR when he got done with that. So HPR came from him and Droops, a guy named Droops, and Droops did the coding behind the site, and Stank Dog set up the financials behind the server, and then they didn't walk away. I mean, they're still there, but they don't participate anymore. They just kind of, they're there, you know, and everybody else comes in and does it. And we've, like I said, I'm sure we're over, what, 11, we got to be over 1,100 shows by now. Yeah, 1,169 was today's show. So, I mean, that's a lot of shows.
No, definitely. That's insanity.
Yeah, and then we did, last year and this year, we did, New Year's Eve shows. So last year was a 12-hour show. We decided we'd do 12 hours to give anybody from anywhere plenty of time to call in and be a part of it. We wanted it to be a round table where everybody was welcome. And that was such a success that we went 24 hours this year, and it still wasn't long enough.
Crazy. That's awesome, though. Like, it could be people from all around the world, I'm sure, too. Which, like,
oh, yeah.
You have, like, a 24 hours of science going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we get into everything. Science, politics, food, computers. We're a real, like, heavily Linux-oriented community, I would say. And not intentionally. That's the kind of people that have, you know, grouped around it.
That's so crazy. Like, that's awesome, though. I never... Because I've done quite a few, like, podcasts and stuff. I used to have a Shoutcast radio station that was, like, fairly popular. It's called a Whitey Cracker Shower of Power, and I used to just, it's like back when there was this hacker TV called Parse. This was like when streaming, like real media was like streaming and stuff like that. And it was so ambitious at the time, because this is like before broadband was super, it's like 6K streaming type of stuff. And it was really, like, it's insane because just kind of like how you had that whole break in hip-hop, like, with the misogyny, like, and then you just decided to take a break. The same thing is kind of with this stuff is it's amazing to me to see, like, all these shows and, you know, the podcasting, like, that. It's like a phenomenon, you know, where people would stick them on their iPods and then go for a run, you know what I mean, and just, like, have something to listen to, like, and that's such a, like, it's a good dope concept, but, like, it's something that I'd never did myself or haven't even, you know, considered doing anything. But
it's I mean, for a certain segment of, you know, the population of Earth, it's the way to get media to people, because it's once someone picks up podcasts and they become a podcast listener, they turn their radio off forever and they never turn it back on. And I know a handful of guys that have turned off their television as well and never turned it back on. Like, I don't own a television. I haven't owned a television in like 8 years. I know another guy who's never owned one since he you know, became an adult. And I know a couple other people who just don't have them anymore. And these are guys that, you know.
Well, my television is my monitor, my computer. So.
Well, that's true too. I got a cop to that I do see, you know, more than I intend to see, you know, through the monitor. But so I do have to cop to that. But yeah, I mean, it's just people don't even listen to the radio anymore. And then when somebody turns on a podcast to listen to it, they went and they got that intentionally. This is not a casual listener. This is somebody who's involved in a thing. I mean, if they were just going to be a casual listener, there's plenty of free audiobooks and you know, to listen to and put on in the background while you're working. But that's, you know, people seem to listen to podcasts for a reason, and that's really, really cool to know that you've got somebody's attention.
Definitely, I feel that same way with music. Like, it blows my mind because, you know, I started doing it like in my basement for myself or whatever, and then, like, you know, to know that, like, there's, you know, when I can go to, like, some odd town and there's a kid in the front row who knows every line, every song I'm doing, like, that is, it's such a weird experience. I mean, it's just like how I can relate to this type of thing, like, where it's like, it's amazing to have people, like, seek your stuff out and then care about it and want to, you know, listen to it and interact with it, you know, to even be a part. But reason I'm asking though is, like, if you guys just have these, like, crazy hosts, like, because I have access to some odd, because I have this weird, weird crossover in my life, like, where I know a lot of, like, famous people, like, that are, like, regular famous, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, but there are people, like, for instance, like, in electronic music or something, and it'd be really cool to do, like, a podcast, like, an interview with, you know, some of them, you know, like, what I would host it or whatever, and then,
Fuck yeah, dude, please.
I think it'd be kind of funny to do something like that just as a guest host, but,
And there's no restriction on language, by the way. You don't have to censor people at all. You can let them curse up a storm or talk about whatever they're willing to talk about. I don't usually talk that way because I like the idea of, you know, maybe listening to the show with my kids or whatever, or somebody being able to listen with their kids. So I don't do that personally, but there's plenty of people who do, and we're not, you know, nobody poo-poos it. But dude, yeah, if you wanna host a show and record a podcast, hell yeah, we're all about that.
Like I said, probably plan what it would be more of, but I wondered about that too, because I said shit and then you didn't correct me, and so then I think I said shit twice or three times and I said fuck once, so I didn't know if it's one of those, because I've been on, yeah, some ones where it's like, you have to bleep you on the thing, and sometimes I have a really filthy mouth, but for the most part, it's just, like, I think that it's kind of like the garnish, you know, on a dinner plate, like, as long as you use profanity in a tasteful manner, it has an eloquence about it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure, and it's contextual as well. I mean, you can't, you know, you don't talk the same way with your buds when you're out on a Friday night as you do when you're with your parents. I mean, as long as you can, you know, make that distinction for yourself, then I don't, you know, there's nothing wrong with it.
No, for sure.
Oh, man, some of this has been fascinating. I'm going to have to paste some of this back into the part of the show after I said we were done. This has really been cool, dude.
Yeah, well, like I said, anything else you need from me, just give me a holler. Sorry it took so long to get off the ground. I've been in and out and Like I said, I don't know if you can hear. I'm a little head congested, but hopefully that clears up shortly.
I heard it at first. I definitely heard it at first. You sounded like you were clearing out throughout the interview. But oh, dude, I know what you're going through because I've been on antibiotics 3 times now, and this last one was a double dose, and it still just hasn't fucking touched this shit. Like my nose is just on fire constantly.
I'm all about like building and conditioning my immune system on.
Yeah.
Carry me into old age, because at this point, it's just so, but so much, like, you get in these confined spaces, and again, like, I'm constantly hugging, shaking hands, like, doing something, so invariably, I wind up getting, it doesn't floor me the way it used to. Like, I used to get sick, and I couldn't even do anything, but now I just get, I mean, I'm sick, and I whine, but I can move around and do things, so it's good.
Yeah, this year, when I caught whatever the hell this thing is, head cold or flu, whatever it is. This is the first time I've ever gotten sick and been afraid of it. I've never been scared of being sick before, and I was scared with this one because I was getting like dizzy, and like dizzy spells just out of the blue, and it wouldn't look dizzy, like the room isn't spinning, but it still felt like it was, and that scared the hell out of me. I went to the doctor. I was so afraid.
Exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I just honestly, if something as simple as the flu takes me out, then, you know, I wasn't built for this world anyway. Like, ring the bell. Put me in the wood grain, ring the bell.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, I'm gonna run because it's been a while here. I need to grab some dinner and another quick shot. But, dude, yeah, if you want to do anything on Hacker Public Radio at all, it's just hpr@hackerpublicradio.com is the email address, and we'll get you any information you need. And we basically, what they're doing now, they're trying to script it all so that somebody, all they have to do is just upload the show to the FTP, and they're working on the website. They want to build just something you just, you know, click, browse the file and find it. And then the server on the back end will add the intro and the outro music, and it pastes your show notes in and everything the right, and adds all the ID3 tags and everything, but it's coming along slowly, but what they're doing is good work on the back end. But yeah, if you want to do any of that, either just shoot me an email or email HPR at Hacker Public Radio, and we will for sure get you anything you need to complete a project like that. And I will suggest, if you're going to do it with, you know, multiple people and you're going to do it over the net like this, the new hotness is a program called Mumble. And it beats the hell out of this Skype thing, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, like I said, I've done the Ventrilo, like I have, because I mean, obviously I have a lot of professional equipment, like for recording and stuff like that, so I could do, I mean, there's a million ways that I can patch phones in or Skypes, and like I use like Soundflower on the Mac, like to do like different audio configuration routings, and I have mixing boards and everything. So, I mean, if I wanted to get super technical, but yeah, I think Mumble is like the spiritual successor to Ventrilo and TeamSpeak and everything like that. Pretty sure it's for games, isn't it? Like,
yeah, originally it was designed for games, but it works so well that like every podcaster is, well, I don't know about the professional guys, they, you know, the guys are getting paid to do this, but you know, as far as you know, volunteers and you know, amateurs, we're all just using Mumble, and all you do to set it up is just ask everybody to use push to talk instead of the automatic Vox type thing, and if everybody just remembers to hit that button to laugh at your jokes, it sounds very, very natural and extraordinarily clean. Even if you don't multi-track it and just do it a single track, it sounds so clean.
That's dope. Technology, motherfucker.
Yeah, it is badass. You just need a server, and it doesn't even take any bandwidth. I can run a server out of my house and have a completely clean conversation on Mumble. It's awesome. But yeah, technology's always been a wicked fun, a whole lot of fun. And yeah, dude, if you're ever up in the Northeast, let me know, and I will definitely find time at least to go to a show. I can't wait to hear your new music, and I can't wait to start getting some feedback on the episode here. I think We don't get too much feedback out in the open. We just, our system sadly isn't built for it, but you may get an email or two. I wouldn't be surprised.
Great. Yeah, definitely.
Because I don't know about you, but I would assume, I mean, for me, I do it for the feedback. That's it.
Do it for, like, because sometimes it's crazy, because, like, the sort of the questions that you're asking, and then, like, the way that, like, it's odd, because it's kind of like therapy in a way, in some senses, because when people ask you certain questions, the way they word it or something, then some clicks, and you're just like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I love Howard Stern. Like, that guy, he's podcasting before podcasting type of thing. Like, I love watching and listening to Howard Stern, like, the way that he interviews people. Because he says that since he has ADD, like, he can sense when the audience is boring or be getting bored. Like, so if he has a line of questioning that he knows isn't, like, panning out, then he, like, switches the subject real quick. And, like, when it's cool doing these things, because then when you do interview and you're doing feedback and you're getting that constant, like, call response type of thing, it makes you think in a certain way that maybe you didn't look at a situation before or something. And oddly enough, you know, you get asked, like, what is nerdcore? You know, how did you get into nerdcore? Like, that kind of stuff happens, you know, frequently or whatever. But, like, in the computer security context, like, what's the marriage of these things? Like, that's, you know, something that's maybe I haven't looked at so much, you know, because there's how many places you're going to do it? You're going to do a Hacker Public Radio or DEF CON Radio or BinRev, or, you know, there's only, like, a limited venues where they're going to say, like, well, how does, you know, phone freaking fit in with your ethos or something? And so there's a whole different crazy thing. I think every time I do an interview, depending on who it is or what it's for, like, you have, like, it's an odd approach. And I've done, like, another, like, a hacker thing. I think that was, like, last year, I think it was, but there's always interesting stuff that comes out of these things, so I find it fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I got to say that, you know, Stern, having the ability to sense when the audience is getting bored isn't that hard, but knowing the next question to go to when that happens, or knowing how to move on, is so tough to do. I interviewed Richard Stallman, and I had to, like, I didn't know, I was so intimidated beforehand that I just went into our IRC channel and was asking, dude, what would you ask Stallman if you had the chance to talk to him? And that's what I went to the interview with, like, everybody else's questions, because I knew I couldn't handle it on my own.
What does new stand for? What do you, you can only imagine, like, the amount of, again, the questions. Like, that's why I always, again, interviewers that are good, like, and this is, you know, except I always feel like I'm boring. Because I feel like it's just, like, stupid. You know, you feel like you're talking to yourself, especially, like, when you're on TV or, you know, in a studio or something. It's one thing, because there's, like, you get, like, that instant feedback of somebody's, like, face, or you can kind of detect their, like, micro reaction or whatever. But, you know, when it's these types of things, these voice things over the internet, it's just so difficult to be, like, it's like I'm just talking to my computer monitor. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it definitely takes some getting used to, and it's a little more organic when, you know, like, for instance, with Mumble, where I can key up and just say, yeah, definitely, or chime in or something, just to let you know that you're, it sounds a little pretentious to say, to let you know when you're on the right track, but that's the only way I can kind of phrase it right now. But with Skype here, every time I unmute my microphone, it kills you, and I can't even hear you, and I know it's not going to be recorded, and I'm going to boost it up, and it's going to sound like shit. And then when I unmute, it takes a second for you to come back, so I couldn't do that tonight.
Right. No, that's fine. That's why technology sucks sometimes. It's not. That doesn't work the way we want it to all the time. But I'm just in a general sense, it's like, it's odd, like, because there's people that tell you, like, oh, yeah, this is a good interview, or that interview sucked, or you're boring. It's like, it's just, like, it trips me out every time. You're just like, I mean, because, like I said, when I grew up, it was, like, the BBS scene and everything, which is very, like, it was a big local thing, but you didn't have the internet. And now, you know, when some person in Sri Lanka, like, emails you and is like, great job, you're like, how the fuck do you, you know, like, what how is this global shit? It's crazy. It's insanity. How the hell does this work?
Dude, totally. I mentioned on one podcast that I pretty much haven't bought a computer, like, ever, like, since 2001. And I just kind of recycle other people's used stuff and just put it back to use. And I mentioned that. And a dude from the Netherlands sent me a motherboard with a processor and RAM and a cooler on it. It was insane.
Yeah. Those random acts of technology.
And tea. He sent me a single serving of tea also in the box with the computer.
Sip while you installed your new motherboard. That's awesome.
I don't know how to brew tea. It didn't come in a bag. It's like it's not in a tea bag. I don't know how to fucking brew tea. It's still sitting on my counter.
Oh well, at least you can maybe make a necklace out of it or something. Wear around your neck. And keep that.
Right. I get some glue and white paper and do macaroni art with it. What a jerk I'd be.
There you go. That's the way to go.